And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. The topic this week is troubling. And it's troubling on many fronts. And it is dividing this country like never before. For too long, we have chosen to ignore this issue or put it on a back burner. But it needs to be addressed. It needs to be remedied. And it needs to happen now. This is all part of the grand plan, the cultural Marxism that has been unleashed upon our nation by the elite few. And there's an old saying that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. The problem is with controlled media and social media flooding the airwaves with nonsense and the federal government authorizing the propagandizing of American citizens, we have been inundated with claims of systemic racism. And it is destroying America. Recently, there was a murder trial up in the Dallas area. A young athlete from a high school happened to be carrying a knife in his backpack at a track meet in Frisco, Texas. And it started to rain. Well, they have pop-up tents and the teams are supposed to huddle under them while it's raining, unless they're competing. And this young man decided he was going to go under this one tent, even though it's not his team's tent. And you have to wonder, was he instigating a fight? Or was this innocence? Well, there was a disagreement with his being there. This has come out in the murder trial. And allegedly, from what I gather, Carmelo Anthony was shoved by Austin Metcalf. And Anthony reached into his backpack where he happened to have this knife, and he stabbed Austin in the chest, punctured his heart, killed him right there. His twin brother held him as he was dying. And there's video footage, I've seen it. After he stabs Austin, he throws the knife and he takes off. He starts at a trot, then he starts walking, and then he starts trotting again, leaving the scene. And that's part of the problem. There was no remorse, at least in the immediate aftermath. But then the race war began. And because of this, there is a divide being put up in America. Has America always had racists in it? Yes. Yes, it has. Sadly, one of the supreme cluckers was a man from Virginia who actually served in Congress. Bill Clinton and Joe Biden adored this man, Mr. Byrd. And it is documented, well documented, that the Democrat Party founded the Ku Klux Klan. They helped implement Jim Crow laws in the South. And they did everything in their power to put black men and black women on the government plantation. And I've mentioned this before, and I'm not saying this word, but LBJ was a supreme racist. And he dropped the N-word on everybody. Well, it's alleged that on a flight, he was talking with two governors, and a steward heard him say that they were going to have the N-bombs voting Democrat for the next 200 years. That in and of itself is disgusting. So why isn't LBJ persona non grata in the black community? Just because he signed the civil rights law doesn't mean that he wasn't a racist. I think it was a ploy, just like I said, to put the blacks on the plantation again and control them. And if you look at the black communities before Civil Rights Act was put into law, they were a much stronger community. There was no 8 baby daddies for the 8 different babies that this woman's got. It was a home. It was a father and a mother and the children. Were they discriminated against? Most assuredly. Was that wrong? 100%. But what happened to the mindset of the nuclear family? White and black. It happened in the 60s when they introduced cultural Marxism. We've got a documentary DVD I'm going to tell you about in the second half of this program. But I want everybody to recall what was written in the Declaration of Independence. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Didn't say white men, didn't say black men, didn't say brown men. It said all men are created equal. And there are a number of instances that are instructional in God's holy word. All you have to do is take the time to look at them, read them, put them on your heart. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, "Of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons." Acts 10:34. God is no respecter of persons. Doesn't care where you come from, what your pigmentation is. But you have to be a child of God. Acts 17:26. "And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth." I don't understand why people don't. Well, I do, because we have left the church. The false teachers have taken over the pulpits. The liberalization of the church has removed these tenets on how to live. James chapter 2, verse 8 through 9. "If ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors." Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And Revelation 7, 9 says, "After this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes and palms in their hands." And still, we have heathens that have taken to the airwaves, that have taken to TikTok, to Instagram, to X, and they are spewing racial hatred on both sides. It is so sad where this country is heading. Now, the Gateway Pundit puts out a lot of great articles. This was a program by Grant Stinchfield. You can listen to it at thegatewaypundit.com. I'm going to read what he wrote. The reaction to the murder of Austin Metcalf and the conviction of Carmelo Anthony tells you everything you need to know. Instead of standing firmly on the side of truth, personal responsibility, and justice, too many voices on the left immediately turn to victimhood, racial division, and excuses. Facts became secondary. Reality became optional. And nobody personifies this disconnect better than Jasmine Crockett, the loony leftist from the Dallas area who just got beat out in her bid for the Senate here in Texas. She suggested that the knife used in the killing was not a deadly weapon. This woman is so detached, and so many of her followers are detached from common sense, that it defies belief. In this instance, we have lost two young men that could have made a difference in today's society. One was murdered, and one will spend at least 17 and a half years in a penitentiary. What good does that benefit society? Not one iota. One family will never see their child again, and one family has to make appointments to go visit a son in prison. Both families are devastated, and they should be. But we don't focus on the victim. We have politicians more interested in creating narratives that will fit into their political agenda. This goes for influencers on social media. This should have been a straightforward conversation about what's right and what's wrong. Instead, it has become another instance in which we inflame racial tensions and pit Americans against each other. The same people who claim to oppose division seem determined to inject race into every tragedy, every crime, and every headline. I want you to hear Jasmine Crockett in her words.
What we saw with that verdict is the evidence of a broken system. Now listen, from everything that I understand, which I wasn't at the trial because obviously I got a day job, but it's my understanding that Carmelo ended up stabbing, puncturing, I don't know what this tool was that they talk about, knife, or some refer to it as a tool. He ended up hitting Austin one time, and it was about where he hit him. One time, 2 inches. This wasn't someone who said, hey, let me stab you 5, 6, 7 times. And so when you're looking at the punishment range, there's a reason in Texas that it goes from 5 to 99 or life, because you are looking at how intentional, like how bad was this? 35 years for a kid who had decided to go under a tent that was not his team's tent as it was raining and simply didn't want to be put out in the rain by some random kid that he didn't know who was larger than him. Listen, a lot of people don't know what it is to live as a black person in this country, but just like you can give the benefit of the doubt to so many police officers when they go out and they shoot some black unarmed person, even though they are trained, the fact that there was little to no mercy seen or humanity seen when this black boy said that I was scared, or the fact that honestly anybody else who did something with such a small object, all I know is that it wasn't considered unlawful carrying of a weapon because the blade was not long enough, that they wouldn't even say, well, maybe this was more so something that looked like manslaughter.
Number one, why was he carrying a knife to a track meet? Weapons are not permitted on school grounds, ever. But yet he's got a knife in his backpack. He knew that he wasn't welcomed in this opposing team's tent. And then the witnesses seemed to intimate that he was the aggressor, that he was the one starting the hubbub. But Jasmine Crockett had to manipulate the facts of the trial into her narrative. And she was on the committee that was interviewing the leader of the SPLC, and they're having a hearing about the illegal tactics of the SPLC using donor funds to foment race wars so that they could get more money from their donors. Instead of querying the person from the SPLC, she decided to go on a rant. She screamed about white men. She used a fake accent. She launched her racist attack, saying Republicans on the committee are not credible because the vast majority of them are white. They're white men. She said, quote, "White men are lecturing people of color because the vast majority, actually, any semblance of diversity comes from this side of the aisle. You want to tell people of color who is fighting for who. People of color do not feel comfortable or welcomed within your party." Close quote. Dr. Alveda King, Martin Luther King's niece, was there to testify. She was there on behalf of the Republicans. And she said this about Dr. Alveda King, quote, "That's why you have to parade someone who has the name Dr. King attached to them so that people can be confused, because I have been reading the comments online and people are like, who is this Dr. King? Because you want them to believe that somehow she espouses who Dr. King was." Close quote. She attacked a living relative of Martin Luther King. And she claims that Dr. Alveda King doesn't understand the teachings of Martin Luther. She continued to attack the Republicans and the Senate nominee from Texas, Ken Paxton. And then she stormed out of the room. Dr. Alveda King had not even been given time to respond to her crazy attacks. This is what Dr. Alveda King said, quote, "Congresswoman, I am a bit emotional. I'm going to watch what I say, but it seems as though you have suggested that I am a bastard to the King family legacy. I am legitimately the daughter of Reverend Alfred Daniel Williams King and Dr. Naomi Ruth Barber King. We are a family who loves God, and I love you." Close quote. And then Wesley Hunt got on the microphone. He is a representative from Texas, and he pummeled this crazy woman from the Dallas area. He explained that he was a black pilot. He became a pilot before the left started pushing DEI policies, which eased the requirements for minorities and women, regardless of their skill. Mr. Hunt said, quote, "I had a previous colleague that talked about seeing a black pilot and what that would mean. And funny, black pilot here, by the way. I actually went to flight school. West Point graduate. Learned how to fly the Apache helicopter with the flight school in 2005. You see, there was no DEI. We just simply competed with everyone else, and I was selected for combat. Went on to fly 55 combat air missions. And nobody gave a damn what I looked like because I got there on merit. What DEI does is it lowers standards based on race and based on gender." Close quote. And I have a quote from Thomas Sowell. He says, quote, "Racism is not dead, but it is on life support, kept alive by politicians, race hustlers, and people who get a sense of superiority by denouncing others as racists." And I saw an interview on 60 Minutes with Morgan Freeman many years ago, and Mike Wallace was asking Morgan Freeman about how do you deal with racism. And I've got a clip here. I want to play. It's about a minute long. It's really good educational listening.
Black History Month you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month? Come on. Tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay. Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh. Why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism until...
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman. You want to say, well, I know this white guy named Mike Wallace. You know what I'm saying?
How profound. He's a man. He's an American. And the best line that I liked was, Black history is American history. Did we have problems before? Yes, most assuredly. But I also like the part where you're white. Well, actually, I'm Jewish. They don't claim to be white. They're a separate race all unto themselves. That just stands out to me. But racism, like Thomas Sowell said, is on life support except for the race hustlers and the people that get a sense of superiority denouncing others as racist. And Denzel Washington was on an interview tour for one of the movies that he made, and they asked him how we could, what was wrong with the system and how to fix it.
Do you think we've made any headway?
I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up 7-year-olds. Yeah. You know, I was in Chicago a couple of 3-4 weeks ago, and we saw these little kids on bikes with masks on the side of their head, like 5 or 6 of them. And the driver said, yeah, they're little yummies. I said, who? He said, little yummies. Look up. Google Lil Yummy. Mm. Lil Yummy was an 11-year-old murderer.
Wow.
And you look at his picture, you'll see the headshot of him, and he's like this. And he got murdered at 11 by a 14-year-old.
Wow.
Who's doing life now, and a 16-year-old.
That makes no sense.
You blame the system? Where was his father? Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
You know, I did talk about my 3 closest friends, and they did, you know, 15 to 25. One did 28, this and that. I was the only one of the 3 that had a father in my life, even though my parents were together. But I still had a father who was a gentle man and a good example,
yeah.
And they didn't. We can blame the system if we want, but they didn't lock any of us up at 7.
Yeah.
We were all doing enough to get locked up at 13. My parents sent me in another direction. They didn't have anybody to help them, and they kept doing what they was doing, and the system got them.
It starts in the house. How many times have people heard that? It's parenting. It starts in the house. And that is so important, a lesson. Denzel talked about his friends went to prison. They didn't have a father. But his parents, even though they weren't together, his father, a strong, gentle man, was in his life. And now he's an Academy Award-winning actor. He's successful. His children are successful because he's in their life. But this isn't how it was planned. Tex had Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson on a number of years ago, and I follow him on Twitter because he has a biblical life that he teaches on his radio show out in L.A., and I don't know that many people listen to him, but I want you to listen to this clip from Reverend Peterson.
O.J. was found not guilty, and the black audience cheered it on. Yes! And the white audience was like, what? What are y'all cheering on? That was back in 1995, and things have gotten worse. They have not gotten better. Polls from 1995 show 78% of black Americans approve in Simpson's not guilty verdict versus 42% of white people. God did not create you to be divided like this. We are supposed to be one.
God did not create us to be divided like this. Profound words. But I don't know that people give it that much credence. But Bob Woodson was on with Dr. Phil. And I know this is a bit lengthy, and this will take us to the halftime break. But what he says, the audience didn't make a peep. They sat on the edge of their chair, and they listened to what Bob Woodson had to say.
You say you don't support reparations. Why not?
Not everybody suffered equally. I mean, when you go into slavery, it's much more complex than are white people were the oppressors and black people were the victims. If you dissect it, you will find there were about 3,700 free blacks who owned 12,000 slaves, black slaves. The question is, do the descendants of those free blacks who owned black slaves, do they pay? Blacks really benefited more the first 100 years after slavery than we have in the last 50 years. I was born in 1937 during the Depression. Everyone in my small, low-income black community, 98% of the households had a man and a woman raising children. Elderly people could walk safely in that community without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. Never heard of gunfire during that time. Never heard of a child being shot to death in the crib. But there are 50 children today who have been shot and killed in our cities. If you're talking about remedies, we've got to look beyond saying that every solution has to have a winner and a loser, that blacks can only benefit if whites lose. We have to be defined more than just victims of oppression. When whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best. When we were denied access to hotels, we built our own. We have to communicate to our people the history of how they achieved in the face of oppression. But if we continue to sit back and say all of the challenges that we face in out of wedlock births of violence, that somehow the control of that is in the hands of white America, and therefore until white people change, there's nothing that we can do. This sets up a terrible situation for this nation. The big crisis facing America is not racial. It is a moral and spiritual freefall that is consuming our children. The highest death rate among black families is homicide. Among Silicon Valley, the highest level of suicide, 6 times the national average. In Appalachia, there are prescription drugs. And so if we are to address this crisis that is causing our children to lack a sense of personal responsibility or value for their own life, they will take their own life or take someone else's. So in order to address that, we must come together and look beyond race and realize America is drowning because it's in a moral and spiritual freefall. None of us should be defined by the worst of what we were in the past, but we should be defined by what we want to become in the future, and that people are motivated to change when you give them a vision of victories that are possible, not constantly reminding them of injuries to be avoided.
Powerful words. We have to take a brief pause. I want to thank you for giving me some of your time. When I come back, I'm going to dive right back in. This is such an important topic that needs to be addressed. Doesn't need to be sugar-coated. But we have racism that is dividing this country. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to tell you about an outstanding documentary that we offer entitled Cultural Marxism, The Corruption of America. Cultural Marxism explores the love affair with collectivist ideologies that has led to ever bigger government and the welfare warfare state. Find out how the Frankfurt School, a Marxist splinter group, established itself at Columbia University and began the long march through the institutions. The idea was, and still is, to infiltrate every corner of Western culture and pervert traditional Christian values with political correctness and Marxist ideologies. The ultimate goal is to destroy American free enterprise capitalism by undermining its economic engine, the middle class, and the basic building block of society, the family unit. This is an incredible video documentary from James Yeager. It features Ted Baer, Pat Buchanan, G. Edward Griffin, Ron Paul, Edwin Vieira, and more. This is a powerful documentary that you need to put in your library. Share with your friends, your family, your neighbors. Have a watch party. Get everybody informed in the diabolical plan that is political correctness, also known as cultural Marxism. 98-minute DVD, we're only asking $20. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That will make your total $26. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for the video right there on a main page. Click on it, put in your name, address, charge card, shipping method, hit submit, we'll get it and get it coming to you. If you want to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. $26 postpaid for cultural Marxism. Okay, let's continue with our program. Systemic racism is destroying America. Now, before the trial, the family of Carmelo Anthony set up a give, send, go campaign to raise money that they claimed would help with the legal defense of this young man. But they also claimed that a portion of this money would go for the family's living and security expenses. They raised almost $630,000 before Carmelo was convicted and Give, Send, Go cut off the campaign. $630,000. That's a lot of money to pay for a defense lawyer and to, if he's convicted, help pay for an appeal lawyer. Instead, the family took this money. They bought a house in a gated community. They bought new cars while their son was facing a possible life sentence in the penitentiary for murder. That's the parenting problem that I see. That bothers me. And now that he's been convicted, he is claiming that he is broke, destitute, penniless, and an indigent person, and too poor to employ counsel for his appeal. Now, I found out today that he has got a group of lawyers that are going to represent him pro bono in his appeal, but raising almost $630,000 and he is penniless and can't afford representation for his appeal. Is this how the family treated him when he was a child? It's all about me. I need a house. I need this. I need a new car. Denzel Washington said it. It starts in the home. And I don't care what pigmentation you have. It starts in the home. If your child is a thug, what did you do in the home to discipline him so that he would not continue down this pathway? I was on X earlier. Leslie walked into my office and she watched a video that just happened to be on my feed. It was a young child, probably 8, 9, maybe. And his mother wouldn't give him the remote control for the TV. So what did he do? He started punching his mother. Nobody else came to her aid. This child had no respect for his mother. That's a parenting problem. Doesn't matter what race. That is a parenting problem. Until we handle the parenting problem, our society is going to dive deeper and deeper towards the abyss. Now, after Anthony was found guilty by the jury, a representative of the family blamed the all-white jury for the verdict. It wasn't an all-white jury, but that didn't matter. And it didn't matter that Carmelo Anthony stabbed a young man with a knife he wasn't supposed to have on school property at a track meet. It wasn't Carmelo's fault. It was the white jury. This representative's name is Dominique Alexander. He's tied to the Next Generation Action Network. Another race hater, another race baiter, another racist. In fact, there were 3 Asians on the jury. There was 1 Muslim woman. I think they said she was from Haiti. And there was an Hispanic male on the jury. It was predominantly women. But it was a racist jury because there were no blacks on the jury. And it wasn't Carmelo's fault. He got shoved, so he stabbed a guy. It was self-defense. Oh, my goodness. The idiocy and the blatant racism that nobody's calling out bothers me to no end. Alexander said, quote, "It showed very clearly that a black boy was allowed not one black soul on a jury. An all-white jury convicted him in 2 to 3 hours. We know they did not prove their case. Right now, what we are seeing is a travesty. It lets us know that black lives do not matter in the criminal justice system." That's one. Angela Ray is a loony left podcaster. And this is how she described Carmelo Anthony murdering Austin Metcalf.
"This was always about race. It was always about race. It was always about race the moment that a black boy had the nerve to protect himself against a white aggressor."
A white aggressor. There was a shove, allegedly. But from what I have heard and read from reporters who were in the courtroom, he was the instigator. He was the aggressor. This is after he sat down under the tent. When he was convicted, he broke down in tears. And the supporters outside the courtroom went ballistic. They started screaming, "This whole thing is racist." They believe in their heart of hearts that he was only guilty of defending his personal body. But there is video evidence and witness testimony telling a much different story. But it doesn't matter to his wild-eyed supporters. They claim that Carmelo is the victim here and that he should have walked free. And when it didn't happen, all hell broke loose outside the courtroom. Tamara Neely was there. She reported, quote, Austin Metcalf and a group of friends left the courthouse. They were surrounded by a large group of Carmelo Anthony supporters. According to them, members of the crowd shouted that they would urinate on Austin's grave, that his brother should be dead with him, and they even spit at these people. Another community organizer claimed that they wanted to dig up Austin's body and stab him again. That's rabid racism. Nick Schroeder is a reporter. I've talked about him on here before. He wrote, quote, they're now blaming Austin Metcalf's parents for Carmelo murdering their son. They also called for the death of Austin's twin brother, close quote. In another post, Nick posted, quote, they're openly calling for murder. This was never about self-defense, close quote. Elijah Schaefer wrote this, quote, random supporters are approaching white people like myself and screaming at us. Lots of anti-white racial slurs being thrown around. I've already been threatened and assaulted along with my crew. It wasn't just white people getting harassed. It was anybody who didn't support a convicted murderer. The media and the black community tried to make this case about race. But it was never about skin color. It was always about a poorly raised teen who lived a thug lifestyle. Close quote. Once again, we go back to Denzel Washington. It starts in the home. It's the parenting. But LA radio host Dominique DePrima stated that these protesters did not shout any racial slurs at the white protesters. But listen to how she describes the white people that were there.
He is still in county jail in Collin County, Texas, which is probably got their share of white supremacists. We saw them outside the court. And I saw this news reporter talking about the Carmelo Anthony case, and she was saying that there were crowds of people yelling racial slurs at each other. No, that's not right. The black people were not yelling racial slurs at the white supremacists. They were calling them fascists. They were calling them racists. But they weren't calling them saltines or any other racial slur.
Really? Well, here is a clip from what the protesters had to say.
Only good cracker is a dead cracker. Only good cracker is a dead cracker.
The racial slurs were coming in one direction only.
Really? The racial slurs were only coming from one direction. All I heard was, the only good cracker is a dead cracker. And another woman goes right on. So who is the racist? The white supremacist, as she described them? How did she know? Did they have hoods on their head? Just because they were there supporting the Metcalf family doesn't make them a white supremacist. Unless you're a racist and you want to portray anybody that didn't support this thug as a supremacist. And I came across this woman. She posted this on Twitter. Could have been on Instagram. I can't remember which. But she had this to say. This is a black woman. And she had this to say about the black community. And I had to cut out. She didn't hold anything back. I will tell you that. But I cut out and removed some of the derogatory terms, and I want you to listen to what she had to say about this.
I've watched black people jump around like monkeys, act a belligerent fool over a decision that somebody chose to do. And now, y'all are out here harming innocent white people in the name of Carmelo Anthony. Again, as I've said before, I am a Christian woman. Since I'm on the road with keeping it real about you, let's keep it real. Y'all with this mentality mindset is holding white people hostage. And you're holding white people hostage for what you did. Y'all have been violating God since the biblical time. Y'all have been so disrespectful to the word of God so bad that he put a curse on us. He said that your kids and your kids' kids and their kids are going to feel the effects of your disrespectfulness. And it's so crazy because to this very day, y'all still continue to defy God. We are the reasons that we are at the bottom of the totem pole. No other race is responsible for why we are here. The same behavior that's happening now was the same behavior that happened back then. And because of that, we are still reaping what we sow behind it. We put our own self in bondage. We put our own selves in captivity. All because of our stupidity. It's all because of the bad behavior. What do we say? We know when a person has learned their lesson through changed behavior. And the behavior is still the same. We have not learned nothing. Because we have learned nothing, we are continuing to rot as a nation of people. That is why I am so grateful that God has separated me from the majority of you. This is a subset of black people. It's not all of us. It is a subset of us that displays this animalistic behavior that make y'all think that we as a people, that we all act like that, and we don't. And I hate to say it, but until the mindset of black people change, this Carmelo Anthony case is going to be a continual thing. Black kids will continue to die. Y'all be blessed.
Sadly, she's right. Unless the parenting ticks up, then we're going to have more black on black crime and murders. Mr. Woodson said it in the first half that the majority of blacks are homicides. It's a sad cycle. And unless you're willing to accept the problem and look for solutions, the cycle will continue. There was a woman protester that was interviewed by a reporter, and she just kept getting madder and madder. She said, quote, "What do you want us to do? I'm at a loss for words. I don't know what to do. I got five boys. I ain't got nothing to tell them no more." Close quote. Well, this was posted on Twitter, and there were a number of responses. Andrew Colvette said, "You tell them don't murder people." Lisa Knows said, "Tell them not to murder people. And as for the fantasy that he walked away, that is a blatant lie." George said, "Maybe tell them not to go around stabbing other boys at school." Matt Van Swole said, "I would tell my boys, hey, don't stab people with knives, but that's just me." Lama Todd said, "Tell them not to murder anyone. Seriously, how do you go through grade school to high school and not get shoved once in your life? Impulse control and not chimping out and having a disproportionate response. Be a better parent. Don't burn the city down." Now, Officer Brandon Tatum has a podcast. Some of the things that he talks about, I couldn't be further away from him. But they asked him in an interview what he thought about this verdict, and we can agree on this one.
Yeah, I think it was the right verdict. I saw it coming from a mile away. When you go to a track meet with a knife and then you end up stabbing somebody in the heart with disproportionate amount of force, even if you try to claim that it was self-defense, it still have to be proportional. If a person pushes you, you can't shoot them with a gun. You can't stab them in the heart and kill them, because deadly force is not necessary in that situation. But as we've seen from the witnesses, and many of them were black, that Carmelo Anthony was the aggressor. Carmelo Anthony was the one that caused the issues. And Austin Metcalf said, "Look, I don't want to fight you." He's trying to avoid conflict. And Carmelo Anthony doing what he did led to that verdict. And I think it was very simple and easy for the jurors to put that together when you add the elements of crime And obviously the witness testimony, like I said before, is very simple. And people like Jasmine Crockett are completely insane. And it's a problem in our nation when you have individuals like that completely lying and conflating the truth and then being outraged about it. Because Carmelo Anthony wasn't up against a person that was 300 pounds just beating him down. That was not even the case, and it wasn't true. But this tells you and shows you how racist these people are. To lie and say that a black woman in America somehow faces fear for their son, my mama not afraid for me because I'm not committing crimes. It is a lie from the pit of hell.
My mama's not worried because I'm not committing crimes. He was a police officer. But it has crossed all kinds of different genres. Cardi B, she's a rapper. Not a very good person, but she got on Twitter, X, she lashed out about this verdict, didn't like it. She accused the jurors of trying to make an example of Carmelo Anthony. And this sparked a bigger discussion on black-on-white violence and anti-white racism in America. The same old BLM crowd is livid that this black youth couldn't stab a white person and get away with it. Cardi B commented, quote, wow, just freaking wow. Disgusting. This is not justice. This is trying to make an example. 3 exclamation points and a close quote. The responses to her post called her out for crying victim and acting like black people should be able to get away with anything. Tommy Lauren said, yes, the example is don't stab somebody in the chest. Thanks for playing. Matt Van Swall, once again, he said, I know, it's like, damn, black people can't stab any white people to death anymore and not go to prison just because they're black. Devastating. Sarcasm is strong in Matt. Zeke Arkham got on and said, trying to make an example? Yes, Cardi. Stabbing people is bad. We should make stabbing people as unattractive as possible. Might cause people to think before they stab someone. Thanks, I think. And I came across this young woman's Instagram post. Her name is Raven Hartwell. And she doesn't sugarcoat it. I want you to listen to what she had to say.
It sounds like so many people are running away from accountability as well as responsibility rather than running to it, taking it, reevaluating our community and our boys' influence and teaching them the right thing rather than teaching them to always be victims. We glorify YNs. We glorify anger. We glorify unforgiveness and hatred and then get mad when the system judges you based on your actions. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. You judge according to favoritism, which is in and of itself sin. Your hatred is blinding you, and through it you are conceiving a generation of black boys to only go to jail.
Wow. That's powerful. That was a powerful message from a young lady. I wonder if it's going to reach the community or if it's going to fall on deaf ears like most everything else has. Because it's easier to blame somebody than to accept responsibility for your actions. And that's part of the problem. This was reported by TMZ. Someone told the family Austin's twin brother Hunter should have died with Austin. And that Austin, they dropped the F-bomb, around and found out. People are threatening. They are threatening to show up at the Metcalf home. They are taunting them by saying they're going to urinate on Austin's grave. There was a picture, I don't know if it was AI generated, of somebody actually doing that on Austin's grave, desecrating the grave. They have no suspects. No arrests have been announced as of yet. But what would cause people, I'm not even going to say a group, but what would cause people to have so much hatred in their heart that they would think that this is okay? Well, Joy Reid, I'm going to get close to the end with this one. Joy Reid was on with an ex-castoff from MSNBC, Alex Wagner, and they had a chat. You know, Joy Reid is one of the biggest race baiters in the country. And she was denigrating the upcoming July 4th celebration of America's 250th anniversary. They were talking about Juneteenth and the nation's founding. And Ms. Reed argued that the 4th of July should not be viewed as a unifying national holiday because many of the founding fathers owned slaves. Well, Mr. Woodson pointed out that there were black slave owners too. And nobody wants to talk about the slaves in Africa, how they came to be purchased by the Jewish slave traders. They were slaves themselves already because their tribe had been defeated by another tribe. Do some research. Do some digging if you doubt me. There was slavery in America before Columbus got here. Indians would take other tribes, wipe out everything that they had to, and make slaves of the survivors. Slavery has been around for way too long. But for these race baiters, these racists themselves, to get on a podcast and claim that this isn't a unifying holiday and that Juneteenth is actually Independence Day for black Americans, listen to what Joy had to say.
Because in many ways, and with apologies to my dear spicy white friends, because I know that my white brothers and sisters do love a 4th of July. It is Independence Day. Everybody's barbecuing. It's a thing. I can promise you, black folks, we will take that day off. We will barbecue because we off. But black people, that nobody black I know is really excited about the 4th of July, because it is what Frederick Douglass said it is. It is the celebration of slaveholders who freed themselves from having to pay taxes to the crown for their slave empire. And that is what it is.
So her claim that nobody black she knows is excited about the 4th of July is either a lie or an indictment of the bubble she lives in. In a reply to this video post, Dr. Dina McMillan said, quote, "I'm black and I'm thrilled to celebrate our 250th anniversary on the 4th of July. Of course, the only black people who would be friends with Joy Reid are anti-white and self-pitying like she is. I'd avoid her like the plague." Wow. Families of every creed have been affected by the evil being perpetrated by the few. God is no respecter of persons. It is going to take each and every one of us working hand in hand to repair the damage that Satan's minions have foisted upon this nation. Are there racists? Yes. There are racists in every denomination, every creed. But Morgan Freeman said, how do you stop it? You quit talking about it. But I keep going back to what Denzel said. It starts in the home. Being a parent doesn't mean procreating and making babies and then leaving. That's a donor. That is not a parent. And it takes a male and a female strong parental supervision and discipline to bring this nation back to what it once was. We no longer respect each other. We no longer care for our neighbor as we do ourselves. I'm going to get mine. That's the mantra. And we have to fix it. If we don't, who's to say there'll be a 300th celebration of America? I don't know. We have it in our hands to be able to fix this, but it's going to take everybody. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.